Hey, Trailblazers, we have some exciting news here at the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We have partnered up with Hilltop Packs, not just because they make amazing ultralight gear, but because they're a small family-run business doing huge things for our hiking and backpacking community. Every food bag, dry sack, fanny pack that you order can be completely customized. Print your trail name, your dog's face, your favorite mountain, or really whatever inspires you. When you shop at Hilltop Packs, you're not only buying gear that you're absolutely going to love, but you're supporting real families, real jobs, and small town craftsmanship. So head over to hilltoppacks.com and use code TTP10 to get 10% off of your order. Now on with the episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast, where we embark on a journey through our diverse Texas landscapes and breathtaking trails while always engaging with our amazing Texas hiking community. So settle in, tighten up those bootlaces, and get ready for the thrilling tales awaiting for you on this episode. Welcome to the Trailblazing Texas podcast. I'm your host, Jason. And today's guests are coming to us all the way from Enchanted Rock State Natural Area. We are honored today to have Assistant Superintendent Claire and Interpretive Ranger Hannah. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Jason. We're so excited to be here.
So, as we kind of discussed a second ago, you are the second state natural area to come with the podcast. And you only missed being first by about 7 hours. So two things. Nick says hello from Government Canyons. He says that he beat y'all.
No high for Nick.
To celebrate, we are going to jump directly into my favorite part of the podcast, and that is the lightning round. Just rapid fire questions. Short answers, whatever comes to the no wrong answers and whatever is first thing that pops into your head. So are you guys ready to get started?
We are so ready for the lightning round. We're feeling spicy. Let's get to it.
All right. Claire, you have the first question. Favorite trail in the park?
Ooh, favorite trail. So it's not one particular trail. We kind of have a favorite loop that we go. So I like going up Summit first, because then we get the hard part out of the way. Coming down, I like to hit and go down through Echo Canyon. So then you get a view of the summit, you get a view between two different summits, and then going around the base of the trail or the base of the rock. And so then you get all three points of highlights. You get up, in between, and around. And I'm very much a look at the ground hiker. And so there's awesome bugs. I'm a bug girl. There's awesome bugs, lichen, mosses, lizards, all these little things.
Snake. We saw the biggest coral snake on that loop when we hiked it 2 months ago. It was easily like a 4.5 foot coral snake, and they usually don't get that big.
So he was very polite, though.
So excited. Yeah.
All right, Hannah, one word to describe the summit from the top of Enchanted Rock.
Hannah's not a one word answer person, so this is a lot of pressure for her.
Okay. Three words.
we're going to use the phrase awe-inspiring. Probably Claire's right. I can't really do one word.
I love it. Claire, funniest thing you overheard a visitor say?
Ooh. There's lots of giggle moments day to day, but funniest might be, and this has happened multiple times, people will ask if they get to drive their car to the top of the rock. And sometimes I forget that common knowledge that, no, you cannot drive your car to the top.
That's curious. This is not like a funny inquiry. This is like a straight from the heart visitor question.
Yeah, we'll give directions to the parking lot, and they're like, we drive straight to the top. And I'm like, I have to bite my tongue like, no, you'll park and then hike up. Yeah. And they're like, oh, okay, got it.
Nice. Hannah, pick one. What's tougher to manage? The heat or the crowds?
The crowds, definitely. The heat, I feel like all of our staff here pretty much go, I like to call it lizard mode during the summer. because we're out here every day, we get really acclimatized to it, and we can pretty much handle some nasty temperatures, especially prolonged exposure to them. We're also really great about hydrating and keeping each other safe, so reminding each other and checking in about whether or not it's getting too hot for us. The heat for us is good. Mm-hmm. Whenever we introduce the crowds to the heat, though, that's usually when things get a little bit nastier, right? And the crowds themselves can be really overwhelming, you know? We see about 300,000 visitors a year. Mm-hmm. We're a really small staff, so we end up encountering a lot of those visitors personally. And people can be very unhappy and unpleasant to you whenever it's their holiday weekend and they want to come into the park and they didn't know that you had to make reservations and you're the person standing between them and a family hike.
Break away from the lightning round real quick, but that's really why I wanted to reach out to the state parks. And I want the listeners to not feel overwhelmed and to have a plan before they visit, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's timed entries, whether it's, you know, how much water I need and all that sort of thing. So yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Yep, I love that.
Claire, I love this question. This is your last day at the park.
Okay.
Never to come back. What message would you leave behind for future park staff?
This is something I've actually, not this setup particularly, but kind of a going away message or like a message to keep in mind I've thought about quite recently, actually. I think it would be to remind yourself as park staff that you live and breathe the park every day and guests do not. It's easy for us to get kind of pigeonholed in the fact of knowing all the rules, knowing the do's and don'ts, because we know this place like the back of our hand. And so it's easy sometimes to internally, because externally we're providing customer service, but internally it's easy to start to feel a little bit negative of if there's constant problems going on or rule breaking or whatever you might have at the park going on. But at the end of the day, our job is to make the experience as safe and enjoyable as possible. And yeah. It's easy to kind of harp on some of those specifics, which, yes, we have rules for a reason. But at the end of the day, if you keep those two main things in mind of safety and just having a good time and for our guests to be happy, it makes our jobs a lot less stressful. And then we can better serve our guests if we keep those at the forefront of our mind. So kind of taking time to pull out of our everyday pigeonhole and nitty gritty of details of park life and being able to enjoy it and remind yourself we're at a park. Everyone's supposed to be here just to have fun and be safe.
I love it. Hannah, what is your go-to hiking snack?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked this question. Do I have one in my backpack right now? I think I do. All right. This is not just a hiking snack, okay? This is a shelf-stable work lunch. This is a protein boost. This is your saving grace at the end of an eight-hour day.
So you're saying this is a way of life.
This is a way of life. That's exactly what I'm saying, Jason. Thank you for seeing me. This is the HEB single-serving tuna packets. They come in flavors. And they're delicious. It's kind of gross. You can just squeeze them into your mouth like a Go-Gurt, essentially, so you don't need utensils. It's crazy protein. It's crazy sodium and electrolytes. It tastes, there is nothing that will ever taste better than the dill pickle flavored HEB tuna packet on like a 7-hour hike. This is it. And it keeps in your backpack, which is great. This is always my trail snack. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also my lunch.
I've never tried that flavor, but I'm with you. Like, my heaven on earth is the Guadalupe Mountains, and I even have the west facing ridge line.
Yep.
But yeah, it's backpacking and tuna packs.
Yep. I am thinking of a Guadalupe Mountains trip that I did with my partner. We made it almost to the top, and I was eating it like a little feral raccoon, and I was like, "Why does this taste so good?" And he was like, "Because you've used up every available energy source." Like.
Absolutely. All right, Claire, coolest animal you've spotted at, and I saw in one of your emails, I think, Hannah, you called it E-Rock. So coolest animal you've spotted at E-Rock.
Ooh. So I mentioned earlier that I'm a bug girl. And so I did spot, I don't know exactly, and Hannah might know. Do you remember that one day at maintenance off the tree, I plucked one of those
jeweled scarab beetles.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it was a beautiful beetle. She'll pull up a picture of it. It's a jeweled scarab beetle. And so a lot of times before I found like little green or rainbow beetles that are like the size of June bugs, but this was like a huge fella, like this big.
Oh.
To pull up a reference, but I just thought it was the coolest thing because it was just on one of our trees near our maintenance building. And so sometimes when we're back in our maintenance yard, it's easy to feel a little bit out of the park. So but the fact that we got treated with him out of the public's view and it was like our own special little treat, I was super excited about that. Yeah.
Nice. Hannah, you're on top of E-Rock. Is it sunrise or sunset?
It's sunrise every time. Yep. Sunset is good. I don't like the external time factor because we have to be off the rock by nightfall. If you're a visitor, you can't stay up on the rock all night. So I think it's a lot nicer to go in the mornings, especially because there's fewer people in the mornings and get to experience that for yourself without the pressure that you need to be down in like 5 minutes or whatever it is.
Claire, one thing first timers, so park visitors, must know before arriving at E-Rock.
There's a couple things I would love to say, but I'm going to have to go with reservations. So reservations are not required, but if you want to get in, you better have one. Better safe than sorry, especially during our busy seasons. So unlike a lot of parks, their busy seasons are during the summer when school's out. That is our slow season. And so fall, anything cool, plus spring break is going to be our busy season, and we will sell out within the first hour or two of the day.
Yeah.
We try our best to accommodate and get people in and out of our property so people can enjoy it. But if they don't have a reservation, it puts staff in a really tough spot. Because like Hannah mentioned earlier, we don't want to be the only thing standing between you and getting to go experience our property. Ultimately, it is sometimes that reservation or that pre-planning, like you mentioned, that stands between people and getting to enjoy their day.
You know, and I would agree with you. I just think to the listeners, for me, in my opinion, it's a respectful thing. There's a process. Yeah, you don't always have to make a reservation, but you should if you can. And, you know, it just makes everything go way more smooth. And let me tell you, I've been to an E-Rock one time. I'm 52, so I'm in my 50th birthday. My wife asked, what do you want to do? It's the big 50, and I don't want to have parties, and I like kind of just chilling with the family. And I said, well, it's funny you asked. I've planned an 18 state park trip that I think we can do it in 8 days.
Yes.
Woo. Yes. Oh, we did 15. It only cost me 2 hotels and 4 wineries. But you know, she was in. We made it happen. First off, E-Rock is beautiful. But also, yeah, if you're not there in the morning, you're not getting a parking spot. You're not getting in. So again, to the listeners, even if the park has 2 visitors a year, just make a reservation. It's just going to make everything go way smoother.
Yeah, it streamlines it both on the park's end and on the visitor experience end, because then we'll be able to help them quicker than if we have to start at ground zero.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Nick said in our episode this morning that he had someone count. If you don't have a reservation, it takes park staff like 17 or 20 clicks to get you checked in. And if you have a reservation, it only takes you like 2 clicks. So
yeah, that sounds accurate.
It does sound accurate.
Yeah. So love your ranger and make a reservation.
Going to put that on.
I was going to say a shirt. Yes.
Hey, we can do it. We can do it. Hannah, what is one moment that reminded you why you love working at E-Rock?
Ooh, okay. So every year we have wildlife conservation hunts. So annually our park will shut down 1 week a month from October to January. We do that for conservation reasons, right? We can't have overpopulations of white-tailed deer wandering the property, browsing everything they find. But part of this is that park staff gets to participate in those hunts. And so we aren't shooting or anything. We're not harvesting animals, but we are assisting hunters. So what that looks like is we need to be on site an hour before first light. First light is 30 minutes before sunrise. In the winter, that's like 5 a.m., 4:30 a.m. So we're here really, really early. We take the hunters out in UTVs a lot of the time. We drop them off at their blinds. We come back in. And then it's just quiet. So the park is completely shut down. There's no one here. And about, like, it's probably 20 minutes before, no, it's probably 10 minutes before first light. All at the same time, the birds start. They have this insane internal clock that tells them all at the same time, we're up for the day. And it's not something you'd ever get to experience during a normal day at the park. Most of the time we're here 8 to 5, so we work normal office hours. But that was a really, really special moment. The first time I experienced that, I was with our lead ranger at the time. And I was like, we just dropped off the hunters. I was like, all right, Kent, let's get back to the office. Let's do some paperwork. And he was like, no, you're going to sit down for a second. And we sat down for a second. And I tried talking. And Kent was like, no, we're not talking either. It's 4:45 a.m. We're sitting. And so we sat and we listened and we just watched the morning wake up. And it was the most magical experience. It reminded me why conservation sites like this are so important. It reminded me why we do hunts. It's to give the animals a break in multiple senses of the word, to give the ecosystem a break, because whenever we shut down for that week, we don't have any visitors here. And like it or not, a park that has such high visitation like us, the visitors have a huge impact on the wildlife, on the trails, on the air pollution and the water pollution and light pollution, and getting to that reminder of what this place originally was and what we're helping maintain and support. It's really special. And that's the moment that reminded me why I do this work this year specifically.
I love what you just said, and it's stop and listen. How many times do we not stop and listen? I've hiked and backpacked all of Guadalupe Mountains, and in the backcountry, it's even been at times kind of emotional just to stop and listen, you know? And so, yeah, you nailed that one for sure. All right, Claire, this is just a yes or no, but this is probably my favorite question. Not the most important of the lightning round, but my favorite. Have you ever answered a visitor's question that made you pause and think, did they really just ask me that?
Yes.
Okay. That's all I need to know. That's all I need to know. All right, Hannah, I think this question suits you perfect. If Enchanted Rock had a theme song, what would it be?
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, I don't know that this is the right answer, but this is the song that is playing in my head all the time whenever we just got some nonsense happening. And it's Roger Miller's Oodalali theme song from Robin Hood. It's the Robin and Little John walking through the forest, laughing back and forth about the other. And it's me and Claire handling like a 50-car line. And everyone's mad at us, and the restroom's exploded, and our lead ranger can't get his hands out of the plumbing for the life of him. It's been 7 hours, and he hasn't started doing the water test for the day. Like, it's the perfect amount of, like, silly and nature, and it just it stays up here pretty much 24/7.
Hey, if it popped in your head, it's the right answer for sure. All right, Claire, what is one sound that's found in the park that you wish you could bottle and keep forever?
Okay, so when you are hiking on Loop Trail from the west side, after a rain or in the spring, our whitebrush, or also called beebush, blossoms, and it's a native plant here, and it's got this little white flower at the end of it. It sometimes gets real scraggly. If it's not blooming, you're like, ooh, they should take care of that. And then it rains or spring comes, and it has all of these massive amounts of white blooms, and it's my favorite smell ever. But when the wind rolls through, since all those branches are so skinny, but the bush itself can get really large, it just makes this magical, not quite a whistle, but just hearing the breeze move and navigate through all of these little tiny intricate leaves and branches, it just kind of gives you that goosebump moment of, oh yeah, I'm outside in this really cool place. It's different from being outside in a field or, you know, on your front porch. It's a different kind of sound that I've never heard until moving to this park.
It's wild. It's like it's you are in wild country. Mm-hmm. Is the sound.
Hannah, what does this park mean to you? Not as a job, but just as a place in your life?
I think that's a really difficult question for park staff to answer because so much of our jobs with parks become our lives, right? Especially for people like Claire, she lives on site. So this job literally is her life. And I spend an inordinate amount of hours here and irregular hours here. Enchanted Rock, to me, is like the encapsulation of a Texas park. And Texas, for me, is home. Whenever you come from Fredericksburg, you make the round in the valley and then everything opens up in front of you and you see Enchanted Rock for the first time. And you get that like diaphragm feeling of like, I'm going to hike or I'm going to the park. It's so visually distinct. It's a very special reminder. Growing up, I had a grandmother who lived out in the sticks, grandparents. And whenever you would go to your grandparents' house, we would come up on this hill. It's the last hill before the house. And you could see the top of their house in the trees. You get the same feeling. It's like, I'm going to go see my cousins. I'm going to see my family. I'm going home, right? And that's very much what Enchanted Rock feels like to me. It's that same, like, I'm going home. And this place has been here for 1.1 billion years. It's going to be here for another 1.1 billion years because so many other people feel the exact same way as I do and care about it so deeply.
Wow. Almost brought me to tears. I love it. That's beautiful. All right, Claire, would you rather clean the park restrooms after a busy holiday weekend or lead a group of 20 unsupervised fifth graders on a hike?
Ooh, restrooms.
Yeah. Restrooms.
No hesitation.
All right, this is the last question, the most important question. And as I always say, this question is going to dictate and define how long and how we do the rest of the podcast. So this question's for each of you. Hannah, you can answer first, and then Claire, you can jump in right after her. So last question, what is your favorite Texas hiking podcast?
It's got to be this one. It's got to be Trailblazing Texas.
You know what? All right, Claire, what do you got?
I think I'm going to also have to give it to Trailblazing Texas.
Yeah, you heard it here first. Every guest has answered the same thing, and it just warms my heart that, that, you know, we're all in alignment. It's my favorite, too. All right, so now we start to migrate to the real episode, and it's important for me that my listeners really get an understanding of who both of you are. And so, you know, I think the first thing is, you know, for both of you is how long and you know, anybody can jump in first, but how long have you worked for the Texas Parks and Wildlife?
So I have worked for TPWD for 3 years as of July 21st. So fresh 3 years. And then I've been at this spot particularly for 7 months now.
Okay. Hannah?
I've been with Texas Parks and Wildlife for almost a year exactly. My first day with Enchanted Rock was August 1st of last year. And before that, I did a brief 3-month internship during 2021. But it's in total, it's been like a year and 3 months.
So for both of you as well, what brought you to the park? I mean, you could probably have picked any park in Texas.
For me, it's a little bit of a journey landing here. My first job within parks was as a customer service rep. And then I moved up and that was at Brazos Bend. And then I moved up to Huntsville State Park as their park operations trainee, which is a 3-year management training program. And so around 2 years, I was looking for jobs. I had interviews. I wasn't landing anything. And I was getting in the mode of, okay, obviously I need to buckle down, get some more time in the seat, get some more experience. And then this job opened up. And I was applying at other smaller areas before that I was excited about, but I was like, these smaller areas, like if I'm not ready for it, not sure if I'm ready for this, like this is a beast of a park. but it was just so beautiful. I would have kicked myself if I didn't at least throw my name in the hat. And I'm so glad I did, because it just took the right team, the right place, the right concoction of a recipe for it to work out for me. And I'm so glad, because it's always been a long-term goal to come to the Hill Country. And as someone who's not, I'm from Texas, but I'm not from the Hill Country. It's truly magical. It's truly enchanting. Like Hannah said, coming around that corner and you honestly have that full breath moment of, wow, like this is unlike anything I've ever seen before. And as you go in the park, and even being here 7 months, living on site, fully immersed in it 24/7, I see new things every single day. And so even though that's not what particularly drove me here in the first place, it keeps me here, and that's going to keep me here for a long time.
Nice. Hannah?
So I did grow up in the Hill Country. I grew up in Wimberley, which is a small town about 2 hours from here. So I grew up coming to Enchanted Rock and LBJ State Park and a lot of the Hill Country parks with my family, but also with school groups or camps. Enchanted Rock was not my favorite park growing up. I can't even lie. I did the Summit Trail and I thought I had done it all. And I was wrong. If you're listening to this and you think you've done it all because you've done the Summit Trail, you're wrong. You are wrong. But I did a summer internship here when I was in college. I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my degree, which is in environmental science. And I figured I would try parks and recreation, and no better place than Enchanted Rock, because Enchanted Rock has this, like Claire said, it's a beast. It's the beast of a park. It's got a distinct reputation, but it's also got a reputation for excellency. And I really wanted to learn in that environment. And I did. And then I graduated and I worked as a seasonal city park ranger for the city of Portland, Oregon, which is a vastly different rangering experience than rangering in a state park or a state natural area. And I got a lot of really valuable skills and tools out of that. The most important one being that I did not want to work in a city park anymore. So whenever this job opened up, it is my dream job. And I jumped on it and threw myself at the interview process with everything I had. And yeah, like Claire said, there are a lot of things that keep both of us here and will keep us here for a long time.
So Claire, what does a typical day look like for you? And then Hannah, you're going to have that next question.
A typical day looks like pivoting all day long. You can start with a plan. And even though being a park ranger, you have a set list of duties, you have certain things that you have to get done every day, certain things on a monthly basis, quarterly basis. But at the end of the day, no matter what you plan is never how it goes, for better or for worse, which honestly is my favorite part of the job, because I can come in, think I have a plan, and then 50 wrenches get thrown into the equation. And sometimes that's frustrating in the moment, but I feel like that really keeps things fresh during work. It keeps it exciting. And at the end of the day, it keeps you constantly improving yourself, not only for yourself and for your own personal growth, but for visitors coming in, because then the more experiences you have, the better you can equip yourself to answer their questions, or if they get into any sort of unsafe or sticky situation, help them out if you've experienced that before. And so some typical things that always happen is just making sure we have our morning maintenance meeting. I'm in charge of our maintenance section here. And so we'll all meet up every morning, check in with each other, make sure we have our projects lined out of what we intend to do that day. Whether that's what happens or not, which normally not, but then at least the next day we can check back in with each other, see what we got done, what's still pending on our list, and then just keep chipping away at those projects as they come to us. We're always going to have more projects than we can ever get done. So there's a little bit of job security in that. There's always improvement to do here at E-Rock. And that's for any state property. There's always something that we can be working on, which is great, and it keeps us busy, and it keeps us humble in the fact that there's always things to do, and it's never a one-man show. It's always a team effort.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny you say that, because that's exactly what Nick said. Like, if he was going to give some advice to a new ranger is don't try to do everything at once. He goes, you know, we have tons of projects, kind of tackle it with what you can do and just keep chipping away. So it's funny that you know, said the same thing.
He saw my notes before and copied me.
Yeah, oh, did he? So Nick's a copycatter? Is that what you're saying? Yeah. All right. All right. So Hannah, what about you? What does a typical day look like for you?
It depends on the day. So because I'm the park interpreter, I'm responsible for all of the scheduled educational programs, guided hikes, community outreach, all of the public-facing friendly ranger stuff falls into my court. Most of our visitation falls on the weekends, and so a lot of my programming falls on the weekends as well. During the week, I try to support other teams as best that I can, if that's maintenance, if they need an extra person to go clean bathrooms, or if it's someone to cover the lunch shifts at the office. But it's also just a lot of computer time, scheduling and researching for my programs and developing new programs, communicating with other parts of our agency or with volunteers to help get set up. And then most recently, my weekday duties have included guided hikes on our new properties. So this is something that's only offered during the weekdays. It's offered once a month on each new property, which there are three. On the weekends, it's going to be programming. It's a lot of programming, and a lot of our programming is night sky centered. So I work a lot of nights. I usually come in at like 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, fresh and ready to start the day, and then I'll work up until 10 or 11 during the summer months. And during winter and fall, that gets moved back as sunrise gets moved back.
All right. So these next two questions are the last ones of this section, and I'm going to split them. So Claire, what is one thing about your job that people might find surprising?
At its core, it's a lot of people management, and it's a lot like everyone else's job. A lot of people think of Park Ranger and they think of Hannah. And there's only one Hannah at our park, and no one else is a Hannah here, even though if it's a guest asking us a question, we all have to put on our Hannah hats, and we have to have that customer service and that knowledge and be equipped and ready to answer those questions and provide those experiences. But at the end of the day, I'm writing a lot of reports. I have a lot of meetings. I'm doing a lot of people management, a lot of interpersonal skills, just as much as the public-facing visitors are our guest. Our team itself is my guest that I'm serving every day. And so conceptually, it's a lot like a management job in any other sector. I'm just really lucky that I get to do it while surrounded by the rock and surrounded by my cute shiny bugs and surrounded by all these lizards and trees and really cool, amazing things. Because then when I have a stressful day, or a stressful meeting or conversation, I can walk outside and I can have a breather and have that moment, whereas not everyone gets to enjoy that. And I didn't mean that to sound like I'm rubbing it in people's face, but I see that's how it came off a little bit.
All right, Hannah, this is your question. What is the most rewarding part of your job at E-Rock?
It's just got to be connecting with visitors. We are a very well-known park. We're the fifth most visited state park in Texas. And that means that we see a lot of first-time visitors who aren't used to hiking, aren't used to like going camping, aren't used to being outside in nature or seeing the stars or seeing snakes or lizards or bees. And it is really special to be the link between a visitor's first experience with something like that and the natural world. It's indescribable. I can't describe it clearly. I'm lacking the words.
Either way.
But it's a really special feeling. It's so awesome to do night sky programs and have these big crowds and get to talk to kids or adults who have never seen the Milky Way in their lives. I had a phone call from a visitor last week, and she was worried because we were supposed to have rain. And so I was going to have to cancel our night sky program. She said, I want to see the Milky Way one more time before I die. And I hate to do it. That's a big feeling, right? It's a big responsibility. But it's the responsibility of this park to provide that experience for the public.
I can't imagine gratification that you all get when you see these experiences that people have that are, you know, first timers. And I even think when I say E-Rock, I feel like I'm part of the team. So that's kind of a cool feeling.
You are part of the team, Jason.
Yeah. That's got to wash away any negativity that maybe you've encountered, experienced with people, you know, being people. But yeah, that's, it's pretty spectacular. So great answer for that one. So I know we've kind of talked about this a little bit, but I'd like to just devote a whole section just to the park and its background. So whoever wants to grab this question, it's up for grabs.
We'll go rapid fire.
All right. We're on it. We're warmed up. For someone who's never been to the park and they asked you, like, how would you describe E-Rock? How are you going to respond?
I got it. She got it. Okay. I feel like I would respond with, it's a choose your own adventure. A lot of people come out here for the summit, which is great. I think everyone, if you're able to do it, at least do it once. There's no view like it in the hill country that's going to equate to being on top of the summit. But it's a choose your own adventure in the sense that there's a little bit for any type of outdoorsman that comes out here. And I would really like to challenge people to get outside of your comfort zone when it comes to what type of outdoorsman you are. For instance, I mentioned that I'm a look at the ground kind of hiker. If that's my typical day out, I might go hiking with Hannah or go hiking with our lead ranger to get their point of view to kind of challenge. And then I get to see things that are different than I typically would notice. Because E-Rock has a lot to offer. And if you come here with the mindset of, oh, I just want to go on summit, that's all you're going to see. And you're going to miss out on a lot of beauty that this part of Texas has to offer. So if you're willing to challenge yourself, there's a lot that the park will give you if you're willing to receive it.
You know, it's funny you say that because I feel the same way about the quads. You know, everybody, Guadalupe Peak, Guadalupe Peak. So Leah, who's one of the rangers there, she's coming on the podcast. So I've got approvals for the National Park Service. And I'm really scared to do that episode because I don't want all my listeners to know how spectacular the park is, not just Guadalupe Peak. And so, you know, I have backpacking trips out there for 3 or 4 days, starting in at Dog Canyon. I don't see anybody ever, you know, and so... Okay, I'm not thinking that my little podcast is going to all of a sudden get everybody in the backcountry, but you know, you let out the secrets and you're like, oh, I can't do that.
Yeah, it's hard. That gatekeeping instinct is definitely, I think, in all of us. But what helps me again is just thinking about those first time visitor interactions with E-Rock and with the resources we have here. Like it can and will change someone's life. And if you can make someone care about a site, you can make them care enough to conserve it. And part of getting people better access to the secrets, is gonna ultimately, it will help us in the long run, I hope.
So you're saying I shouldn't be selfish and I should just open up?
I'm saying you should be like 25% less selfish, but only 25%. Keep the rest.
Yeah.
All right. And yeah, and I try to promote, you know, there's nine of the highest peaks in Texas are there, and there's more than the... But I don't let anybody know about the secrets of the park because I think people need to earn that. So, but all the other trails,
and you gotta find your own secrets.
Yeah,
I can't just take.
I can't give you my secrets. It's not for you.
You gotta find your own special thing.
There's an old Mexican Apache Indian grave out there, and it's not in the park, but it's right before you get into the park. It's dropped down, you know, the highway. It's been there since 1855. And it took me 3 years to find it. And so, you know, my tradition is as I'm heading into the park, I stop, go pick up trash from around his grave and visit with him for about 30 minutes. So, you know, that's one of the little gems that people ask me, hey, where's his grave? And I'm like,
That's me and Jose.
Yeah. That, no, Jose. All right. Next question. What makes this place so special historically?
So visually, Enchanted Rock is really distinct, like I said. We are Town Mountain granite, which is a pink granite. If you haven't seen it, it's very pretty. Look it up. It's characterized by a mineral called potassium feldspar. Geologically, that's why we're special, is because we have special rock. That also makes us look really special, and it gives the rock certain types of features. Granite is a really interesting type of rock. It weathers away, especially in the case of enchanted rock, in really interesting ways. So historically, people looked at the rock and they assumed that it was something extraterrestrial. Early settlers in the area thought it was like a meteorite that had crash landed in central Texas because it looks so different from everything else. Indigenous groups in the area would have lived in and around Enchanted Rock for some, Lord. Our human history dates back 12,000 years. So people have been seeing this rock and coming to it for such a long time. And I think that is part of the magic of the rock, is that it's got this human history that we feel so connected to. We know that people have been coming here specifically for such a long time. And it's the herd instinct, right? We have to make that journey to see it for ourselves.
So why is it considered a natural area and not just a regular state park?
Well, that's a fun legal entity thing. That's a legal designation from the state. I have notes for this one because I wanted to get it right. A natural area means a site having valuable or vulnerable natural resources, ecological processes, or rare, threatened, or endangered species of vegetation or wildlife. That's our legal definition, is that we have something special. E-Rock is a natural area because that protection of those resources is going to be our highest priority. We offer recreational amenities like hiking and camping and fishing. If you want to fish, you can fish at E-Rock. Don't spread the word. But recreation is offered kind of as it's never offered at the expense of the natural or cultural resources that we have here. So we offer it as a way for the public to connect with our site, and as a way for them to see it and appreciate it for themselves. But we're never going to have things that damage the environment so much that we are prioritizing those human experiences over the resources here.
All right. So how did Enchanted Rock get its name? And is there any enchantment to the rock?
Were you enchanted? How dare you?
I was.
Yeah, exactly. Then there is enchantment. Claire, were you enchanted?
I was enchanted.
Claire was enchanted.
All right.
The enchantment is what you get out of it, Jason. Enchanted Rock, its name. This is a story that I tell. This is the way that I share this, because I get asked this a fair amount as the interpreter. It gets its name because someone wrote it down and it stuck. The first written instance we have of the name Enchanted Rock was a letter from a visitor to the area back to a New York newspaper called the New York Mirror, I believe. 1800s. I'm going to say 1800s. And in this letter, he references this part of Texas. Specifically, he talks about the Pink Granite Dome. And he says that, and this is a quote, I'm using air quotes, the Indians worshipped their great enchanted rock. It's the first time it gets written down. It's the first time it's published. And for all intents and purposes, the name sticks. It gets the name Enchanted Rock because the European settlers in the area believed that the Native Americans thought that the rock was enchanted or haunted, and that there was some like holy, mystical quality about the site. We don't have a whole lot of sources from the indigenous perspective, because most of those resources would have been pretty terribly wiped out whenever the Native American groups were displaced from Texas. But we have a lot of things from German settlers who were talking about what they witnessed indigenous Americans do here. So Enchanted Rock, it suits the place, right? It's a magical place. When you look at it, you know that you're seeing something that you don't see anywhere else, and it feels special. And I think whenever we have these wild places that look so untamed and magical, it imbues them with a certain like enchanting authority, so to speak. And Enchanted Rock is definitely one of those. Other good story to tell about Enchanted Rock is the myth of the rock talking. This is my preferred myth. At night, supposedly, if you're here all by yourself, you're in the backcountry, you can hear the rock speaking to you, like through the wind, and it's creaking and it's groaning and it's moaning. And this is a scientific phenomena. So granite holds heat during the day in Texas. As heat increases, pressure will also increase. That's basic physics. And then at night, if we experienced like a sudden cold front, the temperature dropped really sharply, the pressure changed, the rocks will shift. And so the explanation behind this is that the rocks shift and it causes those creaking and groaning noises. And that's what we're hearing, that we think is the rock like talking or ghosts whispering or that sort of unearthly quality. The rock is talking in a way, right? It's creaking, it's expanding, it's contracting. And that's a big part of how the rock was shaped, is pressure changing. So it's telling you the story of its formation. It's just maybe not in a human language per se.
A really quick story, you know, again, I love your park, E-Rock, but I also love the quads. And there was a ranger there. She was a volunteer in her 70s. And I just had my 25th trip, I think, to the quads. And I'm in Houston, so I drive 10 hours, hike a weekend, and come back. But I always look for Ranger Pam. And I think also to the listeners, they don't realize and they don't probably see, there's a lot of things that happen in the park, rescues, fatalities that aren't publicized. So I always talk to her because she's always involved in the rescues, you know, and so you kind of get the story that maybe didn't get printed or, you know, that some of the details that are left out. And so Ranger Pam, and also there's a bucket list item. I want to see a mountain lion in the quads. And so she sees them and she just hiked the Guadalupe Peak for her 300th time. I don't know how many she ended up doing, but so she's now, I guess, officially retired. She just recently left the park. And so anyway, I always, hey, Ranger Pam, and I always look for her and we talk. You know, anyway, she's talking to me about a rescue she had. I go, man, that sounds like that movie. And I can't remember the name. And she's like, Infinite Storm. And I'm like, yeah, Infinite Storm. So she grabs her name badge and she turns it where I could see it. I'm like, holy, you're Pam Bells? So the cool thing is someone like her has dedicated their time to our national park, you know, in Texas. So that movie is after a rescue that she had. Anyway, so I geeked out. You know, I don't care about sports people or actors, but man, I was seeing away with me and Pam.
Park emergencies. I respect that.
You know, you were talking about, you know, people, legends and lore and hearing voices. So talking to her, there's episode 11 and 12 was a lost hiker, Mr. Barry, who came on the podcast to talk about, he was lost out there. And, you know, they dropped her off, nothing, just a backpack and to help look. And she said, you know, she's walking to the trail and she kind of stops by Bush Mountain to kind of figure out, okay, which direction that she wants to head out. And, you know, she hears footsteps behind her and she turns around, no one's there. And so she's telling me the story. I have goosebumps. What the heck? And the way she told it was spectacular. And so she just turned around and said, all right, well, this is where I'm going to go. I'm going to go here, here, here. If you want to come with me, come on. So it's, you know, some people you meet that they're just connected in a way that we probably can't even comprehend. But yeah, so she's an amazing person. And I think she headed back to Colorado to stay with her daughter for a bit and then headed over back to, I think it's New Hampshire where she's from and actually where that rescue took place. But yeah, you got to check out the movie because that's Pam.
I love that. I love a superstitious park staff member because we are also deeply superstitious park staff members. So,
all right, this is going to be a fun question. And I think we talked about it a little bit and we got a laugh. And I don't remember if we were recording, but for first-time visitors, what do you think is the biggest misconception about arriving at the park?
That it is literally going to be a walk in the park. The Summit Trail at Enchanted Rock is only 8/10 of a mile each way. Don't get me wrong, it's not very long, but you gain about 425 feet of elevation, and there is no shade. So, if you pull up to the park at 10 a.m., and it's... If it was like today, if it was August at 10 a.m. and you walk into headquarters, you have your tennis shoes on, you've got your athletic gear on maybe, and you have like a water bottle with you. You think that this is going to be like a real simple, like out and back, no big deal. You're pretty fit. You do this regularly, but like you're really an indoor gym rat. I'm painting too specific a picture here. I got to go broader. I'm sorry. Reel it in. It's not a walk in the park. It is a very strenuous trail. It is extremely exposed, and we do see a lot of search and the word that rhymes with fescues out here. We don't like to say the R word because we fear that it will incur one, but we call them SARs whenever that happens. So we see a lot of SARs here, and a lot of it is ill-prepared visitors who didn't bring the right attire or didn't bring the right amount of water or started hiking in the wrong part of the day. Enchanted Rock is very much a wild place, and you can very much still get hurt out here. And that is the biggest misconception, is that this is a sheltered area, I want to say. You are safe. We have very qualified staff here. We have a lot of SARs, so we're very well-trained to respond to them. But we cannot always protect our visitors from themselves, unfortunately.
I was going to say, when you first asked, if you kind of were both buffering for a second, I was trying to find the words to say, kind of along the same lines of, this is not a normal park. This is, and people very much underestimate the rock in the sense that if it feels a certain way when you get out of your car, it's going to feel worse on the rock. That potassium feldspar, the micas, the black kind of more crystalline component in our granite, that reflects all of that sunshine right back at you. And so if you're halfway up the rock and you're already feeling really hot, really tired, chances are you're not going to probably want to proceed all the way up and then all the way back down, because you will constantly be hot the entire time. And a lot of times, like Hannah was kind of alluding to, we have a lot of people, yes, ill-prepared, a lot of new people come out. So that makes sense. But we have a lot of people also who share that same sentiment of, I hike every weekend, or I do marathons, or all these experienced athletic people.
Ooh, what was my favorite one recently?
Recently?
They didn't have any water with them. And I asked this group if they wouldn't mind taking up some water, cause it was about 1 PM and this was this month. And they rolled their eyes at me and they went back and bought water. And they left, and one of their group stayed behind, and he was, like, very confidently talking to another visitor, and he was like, well, they just climbed Everest, so they're going to be fine. Or, like, they were training for Everest or something like that. But just to say, yes, you can be really athletic and very prepared for outdoor adventures, but you can also not be prepared for Enchanted Rock. Those are two different ideas. It's incredibly hot. It's incredibly humid. Like Claire said, the granite is reflecting heat back at you. It's like being in a convection oven, essentially.
On that note, I would also like to add that I would like people to take away from this section that if you think you might be too hot to go out to E-Rock, your dog is especially too hot to go out to E-Rock.
Do not take your dog to E-Rock when it is 95 degrees or above, please.
We have several pet SARs. We bought some specific gear this year of kind of sheets of little ice packs for dogs to lay on to try to help. But even on our decomposed granite trail, the lower, not elevated trail that pets are allowed on, it's still that granite just crushed up. And so it's still having all of those reflective properties. And so one, it's really rough on your dog's paws. Mm-hmm. Another thing that people don't realize, and you wouldn't know unless you work here, this is just because we experience it all the time, even those flatter surfaces of granite that are throughout the trail, if it's blistering hot outside, those can actually severely damage. And I don't want to get too graphic, but it can split dogs' toe beans in half. It's just so hot. And if you don't adequately know how to take care of your pet during extreme heat, the rock will get up to, what did y'all clock it last year with the heat gun? Even when it's 100 degrees outside,
160. It was easily, the surface temperature was 160 degrees.
I'm not going to get started on this topic because I won't shut up. Mm-hmm. But I love dogs. Until you speak dog and ask your dog if they want to go on this hike out in this heat, leave them in an AC or, you know, like, man, don't even, oof. That and watching people throw orange peels on the trail in like the Guads or Enchanted Rock where it's not going to decompose.
Yeah.
I spoke to everyone's dogs, and they told me they wanted to come hike in the winter.
Yeah, Claire spoke to your dog. If you're listening to this and you have a dog, Claire talked to it. And your dog said don't hike until the winter. Yeah, she's enchanted.
Right. I thought you both were going to say you cannot drive up to Enchanted Rocks Summit.
No, we don't get that question enough. I mean, we do get it. We get it too often, don't get me wrong, but we don't get it enough for that to be our main focus. We want everyone to come out here to have a good time and a safe time. And it's so heartbreaking when you see someone's family weekend or their first solo trip or whatever it is completely ruined by a heat illness or injury of themselves or their pet. You know, that's not what anyone comes out here to do.
So I don't know if you both seen the fine print on the Trailblazing Texas podcast invite, but I do have a goal that I get to hike with all the guests. So one of these days I'm going to reach out to you and say, hey, we're going to be at the park. Bring your hiking boots.
That would be great. For sure. Yeah, we'd love that. We'll talk your ear off all then right. too. Don't worry.
Yep. Cool.
Yep.
Claire, this question's for you. How many miles does the park have, or trail miles for hikers and backpackers?
So we have 11 miles of trails on our current property. We do have plans on expanding that with our new properties, but Hannah has a little more specifics about those trails.
Do I have more specifics?
Something about 4.6.
Oh, yeah. So we have 11 miles of trail on the main property. Only 4.6 of those miles are pet friendly, and that is our loop trail. That's a trail that goes around all the bases of the peaks. Everything else in the park is an elevated trail. Those are not accessible to pets, and they always close when it rains.
Okay. For some reason, and I don't know, I heard it from somewhere. I was thinking it was more like 23, but 11's a great number.
No, we are deceptively small, Jason. We're not big at all. We don't have any trails. We have trails.
All right. So next question. What are some of the main trails that hikers should know about? If I'm a hiker and I'm just going to be there for one day, what do you think is that main trail that I need to knock out before I leave?
So the Summit Trail is our most popular trail. If you haven't done the Summit Trail, like Claire said, we recommend that you do it. The other trails that first-time visitors should know about is the Loop Trail, because it stays open rain or shine, and you can take your pets on it. It's the only one you can do that for. And then I would say the one that we always tell folks to do once they finish Summit and they're hungry for more is going to be Turkey Pass. That's our staff favorite trail. It's one that we wholeheartedly recommend. It's not quite as strenuous, so I think you get to focus a lot more on the natural beauty around you, and it's more of an experiential hike than a destination-driven one.
Okay, and speaking of the Summit Trail, and I think we've even touched on it a little bit, but what should people expect? Like, it's not a joke.
You should expect your quads to be on fire.
You should expect a 40-story building that's also on fire.
Even if you train for Everest.
Even if you train for Everest. Yeah.
Those sentiments do make it sound like it's not enjoyable. But it is. But you got to go with the mindset of this is going to be hard, but it's going to be rewarding.
Yes.
If you're not prepared for that, it can kind of be a slap in the face. Which makes it less fun. But if you're ready to work hard for a beautiful view at the top, then it's worth it.
Yep.
And that wraps up another exciting episode of the Trailblazing Texas podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode today, and stay tuned for our next episode where we will pick back up where we left off and guarantee to uncover many more hiking gems and share many more tips to enhance your experience on the trail. Until then, happy trails and happy hiking.